boys and girls. Welcome back to Children's Storytime. Today we return to The Secret of Platform 13 by Eva Iwardson. Raymond stared at the plate out of his round, pale eyes. "I don't want roast potatoes," he said. "I want chips. Roast potatoes are boring." "Now, Raymond, dear," began his mother, "I want chips. This is supposed to be my treat, and it isn't a treat if I can't have chips." Odge had behaved quite well so far. She had glared, she had ground her teeth, but she had gone on eating her lunch. Now, though, she began to have thoughts, and the thoughts were about her sisters, and in particular about her older sister, Fredegonda, who was better than anyone on the island at ill-wishing pigs. Ill-wishing things is not all that difficult. Witch doctors do it when they send bad thoughts to people and make them sick. Sometimes you can do it when you will see someone not to score a goal at football and they don't. Odge had never wanted to ill-wish pigs because she liked animals, but she had sometimes wanted to ill-wish people. And now, more than anything in the world, she wanted to ill-wish Raymond Throttle. But she didn't. For one thing, she wasn't sure if she could, and anyway, she had promised to behave like the girls of St. Agnes, whose uniform she wore. "I want a Knickerbocker Glory next," said Raymond. "The kind with pink ice cream and green ice cream and jelly and peaches and raspberry juice and nuts." The waitress went away and returned with Mrs. Trottle's caramel pudding and the Knickerbocker Glory in a tall glass. It was an absolutely marvellous one. Just to look at it made Odge's mouth water. Raymond picked up his spoon and put it down again. "It hasn't got an umbrella on top," he wailed. "I always have a plastic umbrella on top. I won't eat it unless I have a... yow. What's happened? I didn't touch it. I didn't. He was telling the truth for once, but nobody believed him. But the Knickerbocker Glory had done a somersault and landed face down on the table so that the three kinds of ice cream, the jelly, the tinned peaches and the raspberry juice were running down Raymond's trousers, into his socks, across his flashy shoes. Odge had not ill-wished Raymond Trottle. She had been very good and held herself in, but not completely. She had ill-wished the Knickerbocker Glory. "I want some brandy for my teeth," said Nanny Brown. She lay in the second bed from the end in Ward 3 of the West Park Hospital, in a flannel nightdress with a drawstring around the neck, because she didn't believe in showing bits of herself to the doctors. She had been old when Mrs. Trottle persuaded her to come to Switzerland with the stolen baby, and now she was very old indeed, shriveled and tired and ready to go, because she'd said her prayers every day of her life, and if God wasn't waiting to take her up to heaven, she'd want to know the reason why. But she was cross about her teeth. "Now, Mrs. Brown," said the nurse briskly, "you know we can't let you soak your teeth in that nasty stuff. Just pop them in that nice glass of disinfectant." "It isn't nice, it's smelly," grumbled Mrs. Brown. "I've always soaked my teeth in brandy, and then I drink the brandy. That's how I get my strength." And she had needed her strength, living in the Trottles' basement, helping to look after Raymond, but keeping an eye on Ben. She didn't hold with the way Lorena was bringing up Raymond. She could see how spoiled he was going to be, and when he was three, she'd handed him over to another nanny, but she wouldn't let Lorena turn her out, not with Ben to look after. Mrs. Trottle might threaten her with the police if she said anything about the stolen baby, but the threat worked both ways. "If you turn me out and the boy, I'll tell them everything, and who knows which of us I'll believe," Nanny Brown had said. So she'd stayed in Trottle Towers and helped with a bit of sewing and ironing and turned her back on what was going on in the nurseries upstairs. And she'd been able to see that Ben, at least, was brought up properly. She couldn't stop the servants ordering him about, but she saw to his table manners and that he spoke nicely and got his schooling, and he was a credit to her. That was the only thing that worried her. what would happen to Ben if she died. Mrs. Trottle hated Ben. She'd stop at nothing to get him sent away. But I'm going to foil her, thought Nanny Brown. Oh yes, I'm going to stop her tricks. There's a burglar under my bed, she said now. I feel it. Have a look. Now, Mrs. Brown, said the nurse, we don't want to get silly ideas into our head, do we? It isn't silly, said Nanny peevishly. London's full of burglars, so why not under my bed? The nurse wouldn't look, though. She was one of the bossy ones. What will your grandson say if you carry on like that? She said, and walked away with her behind, swinging. But when Ben came slowly down the ward, the old woman felt better at once. She'd been strict with him. No rude words, eating up every scrap you were given, yet she didn't mind admitting that if she loved anyone in the world, it was this boy. And the other patients smiled too as he passed their beds, because he was always so polite and friendly, greeting them and remembering their names. Hello, Nanny. He always called her Nanny, not Grandma. She told him to. It sounded better. Now he laid a small bunch of lilies of the valley down beside her, and she shook her head at him. I told you not to waste your money. She'd left him a few pounds out of her pension when she went into hospital and told him it had to last. Waste was wicked, but her gnarled fingers closed round the bunch, and she smiled. How are you feeling? Ben asked.
Oh, fine, fine, lied Nanny Brown. And you? What's been going on at home?
Ben hesitated. He wanted to tell Nanny about his mysterious visitors, about how much he liked them, the strange feeling he'd had that they belonged to him. But he'd promised to say nothing, and anyway he'd been wrong because they didn't belong to him. So he just said, nothing much. I've got on to the football team, and Raymond had another screaming fit. That's hardly news, said Nanny Brown grimly. And then, no one's been bothering you, that Mr. Fulton?
No, not really, but do you think you're coming home soon, Nanny? It's better when you're there.
Nanny patted his hand. Bless you, of course I am. You just get on with your schooling, and remember, once you're grown up, no one can tell you what to do. Yes, it would be a long time, though, till he was a man, and Nanny looked very ill. Fear was bad. Being afraid was about yourself, and you had to fight it. But just for a moment, he was very much afraid, whether it was selfish or not. It was very quiet in the ward when the visitors had gone. All the other patients lay back drowsily, glad to rest. But Nanny Brown sat up in bed as fierce as a sparrow hawk. There wasn't much time to waste, and she was lucky. It was a nice nurse from the Philippines who came round to take temperatures. Celeste, she was called, and she had a lovely smile and a tiny red rose tucked into her hair behind her ear. You could only see it when she bent down, but it always made you feel better, knowing it was there. Listen, dear, there's something I want you to do for me. Will you get me a piece of paper and an envelope? It's really important, or I wouldn't ask you. Celeste reached for Nanny's wrist and began to take her pulse. I'll try, Mrs. Brown, she said, but you'll have to wait till I finish my rounds. And she didn't forget. An hour later, she came with the paper in a strong white envelope. Have you got a pen? Nanny Brown nodded. Thank you, dear. That's a weight off my mind. You're a good, kind girl. Celeste smiled. That's all right. She looked closely at the old woman's face. It wouldn't be long now. I'll just make sure about the burglars, she said. She bent down to look, and as she did so, Nanny Brown could see the little red rose tucked in the jet black hair. Bless you, she said. And then, feeling much better, she began to write. Chapter 7. It's simple, said Hans. I bop him. I sack him. We go through Gump. The others had returned from Fortlands in such a gloomy mood that the poor ogre
could hardly bear it. He'd had a good sleep, and when he heard what had happened in the restaurant, he decided that he should come forward and put things right. Cor shook his head. It was tempting to let the giant bop Raymond on the head, tie him in a sack, and carry him back to the island, but it couldn't be done. He imagined the king and queen unwrapping their stunned son like a trussed piglet, realising that Raymond had had to be carried off by force. "He must come willingly, Hans," he said, "or the queen will break her heart." Ernie Hobbs now glided towards a little summer house where they were sitting. He usually allowed himself a breather in the early evening and had left the other ghosts in charge of the gump. "Well, how's it going?" the islanders told him. Ernie nodded. "I'm afraid it's a bad business. We've been keeping an eye on him, and he's been going downhill steadily. Mrs. Trottle's a fool, and Mr. Trottle's never there. There's no one to check him." "I suppose there can be no doubt who Raymond is?" asked Cora. Ernie shook his head. "I saw her steal the baby. I saw her come back a year later with the baby in her arms. What's more, he had the same comforter in his mouth. I noticed it particularly with it being on a gold ring. He'll be the prince, all right." "And what about Ben?" asked Gergentrude. "Ah, he's a different kettle of fish, Ben is. Been here as long as Raymond, and you couldn't find a better lad. He can see ghosts too, and never a squawk out of him. The servants treat him like dirt. Take their tone from Mrs. Trottle. It'll be a bad day for the boy when his grandma dies." He then glided off to watch Albert Fisher eat bangers and mash in his old house and make himself miserable. But first he promised the help of all the ghosts in the city if it was needed. "And not just ghosts, there's all sorts would like to see things come right on the island," he said. He had no sooner gone than Ben came hurrying out of the house towards him, and Odge, who had been exercising her present in the shrubbery, crawled out with her suitcase and said, "Hello." "How is your grandmother?" Gherky asked. A shadow crossed Ben's face. "She says she's all right, but she doesn't look very well to me." "And then, how did it go at lunch?" "Raymond was awful," said Hodge. "I think he's disgusting. I think we should have a republic on the island and not bother with the prince once the king and queen are dead." "Odge," said Gherky in a warning voice. Odge hung her head. She had not meant to betray the reason for their journey any more than she had meant to ill-wish the Knickerbocker glory, but she was a girl with strong feelings. But Cor had come to a decision. "I think, Ben," he said, "that you are a boy who can keep a secret." "Yes, sir, I am," said Ben, without hesitation. "You see, we shall need your help. You know Raymond's movements and where he sleeps, and so on. So we had better explain why we are here." He then told him about the island, about the sorrow of the king and queen, about their quest. Ben listened in silence, and when they had finished, his eyes were bright with wonder. "I always knew there had to be a place like that. I knew it." But he was amazed that Raymond had been stolen. "Mrs. Trottle's got his birth certificate framed in her room." "Well, that just shows she's a cheat, doesn't it?" said Odge. "Who'd want to frame a crummy birth certificate unless they had something to hide?" "Now listen, Ben," the wizard went on. "We want you to take us to see Raymond when he's alone. Do you know when that might be?" "Tonight would be good. The Trotters are going out and Mrs. Flint's meant to listen for him. That's the cook. But all she does is switch the telly on full blast and stay in her sitting room." "That will do then. And now we must think how to win Raymond's trust and make him come with us. What sort of things does he like?" This was difficult. Ben could think of a lot of things Raymond didn't like. After a pause, he said, "Presents. He likes getting things." "Ah, in that case." "No," Odge broke in most rudely. She was clutching the suitcase, and her green eye gave off beams of fury. I won't give this present to that pig of a boy." Cornelius rose. "How dare you speak like that to your superiors?" But Odge stood her ground. "This present is special. I brought it up from when he was tiny, and it's still a baby, and I'm not going to give it to Raymond, because he's horrible. I'm going to give it to Ben." Gertrude now knelt down beside the hag. "Look, Odge, I know how you feel. The Queen trusted you as much as she trusted us, and it was because you thought of such a lovely present for her son that she said you could come. You can't let her down now." But it was Ben who changed her mind. "If you promise to do something, Odge, then you have to do it. You know that. And if giving Raymond, whatever it is, will help, then that's part of the deal." "Oh, all right," said Odge sulkily. "But if he doesn't treat it properly, I'll let my sisters loose on him. And that's a promise." It was 9 o'clock before the servants were settled in front of the tally, and Ben could creep upstairs with his new friends. Raymond was sitting up in bed, with his ghetto blaster going full tilt, wriggling in time to the music. "What do you want?" he said to Ben. "I don't need you. I haven't got any homework to do today, because tomorrow's Saturday, and anyway, you're supposed to stay in the kitchen." "I've brought some people to see you," said Ben. "Visitors." The rescuers entered and Ben introduced them, all except Hans, who had to crawl through the door on his hands and knees and settled himself down with his eye shut. Raymond stared at them. "They look funny," he said. "Are they in fancy dress?" "No, you're..." began Cor and broke off. He had been about to call Raymond "Your Royal Highness," but it was too early to reveal the full truth. "We come from another place." "What place?" asked Raymond suspiciously. "It's called the Island," said Gertrude. Vasa used to kissing children and being godmother to almost everyone, but Raymond, bulging out of his yellow silk pyjamas, looked so uninviting that she had to pretend he was a vegetable marrow before she could settle down beside him on the bed. "It's a most beautiful place, Raymond. There are green groves of ancient trees and rivers where the water is so clear that you can see all the stones on the bottom as if they were jewels." Raymond didn't say anything, but at least he'd switched off his radio. "And all around the island are beaches of white sand and rock pools and cliffs where the seabirds come to nest each spring. And there are seals and buzzards and rabbits and crabs," said Odge. "I don't like crabs," said Raymond. "They pinch you. Is there a pier with slot machines and an amusement arcade?" "No, but you don't need an amusement arcade. The dolphins will come and talk to you, and the kelpies will take you on their backs and gallop through the waves." "I don't believe it," said Raymond. "You're telling fibs." "No, Raymond, it's all true," said Gerkey, "and if you come with us, we'll show you." Cor opened his briefcase and took out a cardboard folder. "Perhaps you would like to see a picture of our king and queen." He handed the photograph to Raymond. It wasn't one of the official palace portraits with the royal family in their robes. The queen was sitting on a rock by the sea, with one hand trailing in the water. Her long hair was loose, and she was smiling up at the king, who looked down at her, his face full of pride. The picture had been taken before the prince was stolen, and what came out of it most was happiness. "They look all right," said Raymond, "but they don't look royal. They're dressed like ordinary people. If I was royal, I'd wear a gold uniform and medals." "Then you'd look pretty silly by the sea," said Odge, "because the salt spray would make the gold braid go all green and nasty, and your medals would clank and frighten away." "Now, Odge," said Gerkey warningly. "Could I look?" asked Ben, and Cor took the picture from Raymond and handed it to him. Ben said nothing. He just stood looking at the photograph, looking and looking as if he could make himself part of it, as if he could vanish into the picture and stay there. But now Raymond sat up very straight and pointed to the door. "Eek!" he shouted. "There's a horrible thing here. And I, it's disgusting. It's creepy. I want my mummy." The others turned their heads in dismay. They knew how sensitive the ogre was, and to call such a clean living person creepy is about as hurtful as it is possible to be. And sure enough, a tear welled up in Hans' clear blue eye, trembled there, and fell. Then the eye vanished, and from the space where the giant sat, there came a deep, unhappy sigh. But Odge now came to the rescue. She had promised to behave like the girls of St. Agnes, who said, "Play up and play the game." And she said, "Raymond, I've brought you a present, a really special one. I've brought it all the way from the island. Look." The word present cheered Raymond up at once, and he watched as she lifted her suitcase onto the bed and opened it. "What is it?" Raymond asked. But he didn't shudder this time. He looked quite pleased. And the person who wasn't pleased with what lay inside, cradled in layers of moss, would have been made of stone. A very small animal, covered in soft, snow-white fur, with big paws lightly tipped with black. His eyes, as he woke from sleep, were huge and very dark. His blob of a nose was moist and whiskery and cool, and as he looked up at Raymond and yawned, you could see his strawberry pink tongue and smell his clean, milky breath. "I've never seen one of them," said Raymond. "It's a funny-looking thing. What is it?" Odge told him, "It is a mist maker. We have hundreds of them on the island. They get very tame. I got this one because his mother got muddled and rolled on him. She didn't mean to. She just got mixed up." She lifted the little animal out and laid him on the satin quilt. The mistmaker's forehead was wrinkled like a bloodhound's. He had a small soft moustache, and his pink, almost human-looking ears had big lobes, like you find on the ears of poets or musicians. "Why is it called a mistmaker?" asked Raymond. "I'll show you," said Odd. "Can you sing?" "Of course I can sing," said Raymond. "Everyone can sing." "Well then, do it. Sing something to it. Put your head quite close." Raymond cleared his throat. "I can't remember any words," he said. "I'll play it something on my radio." He turned the knob and the room was filled with the sound of cackling, studio laughter. "You try, Ben," ordered Odge. "You sing to it." But Ben didn't sing. He whistled. None of them had heard whistling quite like that. It was like birdsong, but it wasn't just chirping. It had a proper tune, a soaring tune that made them think of spring and young trees and life beginning everywhere. And as Ben whistled, the little animal drew closer and closer still. He pressed his moist nose against Ben's hands. The wrinkles on his worried-looking forehead grew smaller. "Ah," sighed the mistmaker. "Ah." And then it began. At first there was only a little mist. He was, after all, very young. And then there came more and more. Even from this animal only a few weeks old, there came enough cool, swirling mist to wreath Raymond's bed in whiteness. The room became beautiful and mysterious. The piles of neglected toys disappeared and the fussy furniture. And the islanders drank in the well-remembered freshness of early morning and of grass still moist with dew. Raymond's mouth dropped open. "It's weird. I've never seen that. It isn't natural." "Why isn't it natural?" asked Odge crossly. "Skunks make stinks and slugs make slime and people make sweat, so why shouldn't a mist maker make mist?" Raymond was still staring at the little creature. No one at school had anything like that. He'd be able to show it off to everyone. Paul had a tree frog and Derek had a grass snake, but this would beat them all. You'd be able to play with Miss Makers all day if you came to the island, said Gurky. You will come, won't you?
Nope, said Raymond. I'd miss my telly and my computer games and my spell text set.
But I'll keep them. He made a grab for the mist maker, but the animal had given off so much mist that he was less pillow-shaped now and nimbler. Jumping off the bed, he landed with a thud on his nose and began to explore the room. They watched him as he ran his whiskery moustache along Raymond's toy boxes, rolled over on the rug, rubbed himself against a chest of drawers. Sometimes he disappeared into patches of mist, then reappeared with one ear turned inside out, which is what happens to mist makers who are busy. The wizard cleared his throat. Now was the time to come out with the truth. Such a snobby boy would surely come to the island if he knew he would live there as a prince. Doesn't the mist maker sound gorgeous? Will Raymond really like him, I wonder? There's lots to be sorted, including telling Raymond he's a prince. But Ben is cool, isn't he? And I love the sound of Odge. We'll discover whether they tell Raymond next time. Till then, happy reading. Goodbye.
This program was produced at Coast Access Radio with the support of New Zealand On Air. Enjoyed this episode? Subscribe to stay up to date. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and iHeart Podcasts.